Hey, it's Zach Clark, producer of the Detroit Football Network podcast with Justin Rogers, Mike Stone, and Will Birchfield. And I have some bonus content for you. But before we get there, make sure you like and follow the Detroit Football Network podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. That way you won't miss the weekly preview and recap episodes as the Lions march towards the playoffs. Today's bonus content is a conversation between Stoney and ESPN.com Minnesota Vikings beat writer Kevin Seifert.
All right, it is time for the Detroit Football Network podcast, the Stoney interview portion of the show, without Justin or Birchfield, the Birchy kid as we call Will. We're joined by Kevin Seifert, who, if you follow ESPN at all, ESPN.com, he's been covering the NFC North and particularly the Vikings for it seems like decades. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It has been decades, but good to see you.
Before the season started, did you ever imagine that this game would be what it is, 5-0 Vikings against 4-1 Lions?
No. I mean, this was, I had been saying this prior to the season, this was like the least anticipated Vikings season that I can remember. Part of that was because of how strong the NFC North was expected to be. Part of that was that the Vikings were, looking at a season of starting Sam Darnold at quarterback, and he had never really had any extended success in his entire career. And part of it, it was a really tough schedule when you looked at it on paper, and it has turned out that way. They've done well with it, but I mean, they played San Francisco already. They played Houston. They had a game at Green Bay, and then they went to London, and then they had the Lions coming on the other side. So we were trying to figure out how many games they would win in the first half of the season, and there were a lot of people who thought it would be one, two, or three games, and they've already won five.
Was this season looked on as, and especially here locally, because we followed him in college, as, well, Darnold will quarterback for the first half of the season, and then it'll be the J.J. McCarthy era, and then, of course, he gets hurt. Did that change their plan completely? Or if they would have started off like this, they would never have gone to J.J. anyway?
Yeah, I had sort of pegged this game for when McCarthy would become the starter, just because it was after the bye, after the trip to London, after the bye. I thought they would not have a great record at this point. Had they gone 5-0 with J.J. McCarthy healthy and at a backup, no, I don't think they'd be switching at this point. But people forget, because it was a very short period of time, that there was about a 36-hour window this summer when we thought J.J. McCarthy had a chance to become the week one starter, because he had just had a great preseason debut. They were going to Cleveland for some joint practices. And if he had crushed those and then he had crushed the other two preseason games, there was a chance he was going to be the week one starter. And Sam Darnold never would have, played at all unless McCarthy had gotten hurt after that. But that said, Darnold's been great. Much better than I think anyone externally could have possibly anticipated. And here we are.
So one more thing with J.J. Before the injury, he did look really good. Were people in Minnesota surprised? Because he never really got a chance to throw the ball that much with the way that Michigan ran their offense.
Well, they were a little surprised, I think, because when he showed up here for the rookie minicamp and really all the spring stuff, he looked really rough, and admittedly so. Like, it was a big adjustment. It is for any rookie quarterback. He's a particularly young one at that. And so we thought, well, this is going to take a while. And then he stayed here in between the OTA period and training camp, and he worked out with a bunch of guys who live here, like Adam Thielen, who now is a former Vikings a receiver now in Carolina, and some other NFL players. And when training camp started, it was like a different guy. Like, he was pretty sharp. Darnold was always getting the first team reps and always looked a little bit better, but he had made some big strides, and the public sort of saw that for the first time in that first preseason game. And he, to the extent that anyone thought he might be a project or somebody who was going to take a couple years to be ready to play, I think he disabused everyone of that notion this summer.
So let's start on the offensive side of the ball. You guys, they get Aaron Jones playing really well. I think he's doubtful, probably won't play this week. But, and obviously with, Jefferson and Addison and Hockenson's hurt as well. the brains of Kevin O'Connell. This was a really good offense going into the season regardless, correct?
Yeah, and two of the best tackles in the league as well, and Christian Darrisaw on the left side and Brian O'Neill on the right side. So whoever was going to be quarterback, whether it was McCarthy or Darnold, was stepping in to a pretty decent spot. A really smart play caller, head coach in O'Connell, and someone who had been an NFL quarterback and I think knows a lot about what it's like to be doubted as a player and how you can respond in that way. And really, the quarterback doesn't have to be the hero here when you have all those weapons and you have the line that they have. And Darnold, for the most part, has not tried to be. And so that's a big part of the story of why he has been successful.
So we know here from watching the Lions play the Vikings that that doesn't make a difference who the quarterback is. I mean, Mullins threw for what, almost 400 yards or something like that last year, with granted with some bad turnovers, but still, I mean, this team has given up a lot of yardage to the Vikings.
And I did a story today. Justin Jefferson has, like, I think it's like a 1,037 receiving yards in 8 games. So less than half a season worth of games against the Lions, he has 1,000 plus receiving yards, and that's the most in NFL history for any receiver who's in 8 games against a single opponent. So, like, some of his best games have come against them. Since Dan Campbell became the Lions coach, I think the Vikings are averaging like 325 passing yards a game against them, and so it's been and the Lions have won a lot of those games, and that's part of the reason the Vikings have had to throw is to try to come back, but they have really gashed them in that process. And so, and the one game that the Vikings beat the Lions, I think Jefferson had like 3 catches. And
That was like the Jeff Okuda coming out party. Well, maybe I'm really not that good, but he had that one game.
Yeah, right.
Against Jefferson. Well, what kind of guy is Jefferson? We saw, obviously on the receiver, but a lot of that stuff is edited out. He just seems, he does the dance and things like that, but he doesn't seem as diva-esque as other guys.
Not at all. And we've had our share here of really Hall of Fame receivers from, I've been here as long as Chris Carter was playing when I started on the beat, and Jake Reed was here, Randy Moss, Percy Harvin, Stephon Diggs. And of all of those guys, I would say Jefferson is the most kind of laid back personality wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not a laid back person, but compared to those guys, his personality is much more laid back, much more, real, I guess. And never has been a hint of any off the field issues at all with him. He had a contract, not dispute, but it took over a year to get his contract set, and he never once really complained about it. He didn't do one of those hold-in things that a lot of players do. In fact, he came to all the mandatory stuff in the offseason. He just missed some of the voluntary things. So really, as low maintenance of a high profile receiver as I've ever encountered.
And he's got like a very modest, a nice house, but very modest compared to a lot of these guys. Has he ingratiated himself with the fan base there? Not just because of his great play, but
it's amazing. Like, if you go, and maybe this isn't just in Minnesota, but I obviously know, if you go to any youth sports event, whether it's a baseball game, any sport, if a kid gets a walk, he's doing the gritty down to first base. If a kid hits a 3-pointer, he's grittying back down, in football, like whatever. Like if a kid wins an award in a school program and is asked to come up to the stage, they're doing the gritty. So there is a cultural crossover to him that is much more than just football. And, I'm not a dancer at it. Maybe it's an easy dance to do. I don't know. But like, everybody does it, and super good with kids. I don't think he has any of his own, or I know he doesn't have any of his own, but they all, like, all these kids swarm him at all these events, and he's great with them. And really, I think that was part of the value that he was seeking in his contract, that he's not just a potential Hall of Fame wide receiver, but he's the face of the franchise. And it's not often that a non-quarterback is that person, but he absolutely is.
More of Stoney's conversation with ESPN.com Minnesota Vikings beat writer Kevin Seifert is next. And now back to Stoney's conversation with ESPN.com Minnesota Vikings beat writer Kevin Seifert.
Sam Darnold, he probably had his maybe worst game against the Jets, but the Jets have a really good defense, as you know. Are people sitting there saying, well, we're just waiting for Sam Darnold to be Sam Darnold, or are they just convinced that, you know, it just took him a while to finally be with the right coach in the right system?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, the first four games of the year was just so lights out. He was, like, number three in the NFL in QBR and just, like just way beyond any expectations that I think – the feeling was that, like, that he's probably not that good. You know, he's not in the Mahomes level of ranking quarterbacks. But the bar for him to have, like, the best season of his career is still very low because of what's happened up till this point. So right now he's, like, I think he's ranked, like, 14th or 15th in QBR. And if he gets through the end of the season, I think it's very reasonable to expect that he could get through the end of the season in the top half of the NFL quarterbacks. Like, that would be a great season for him, and it's definitely within his reach. Whether he's top 10, I don't know. But, like, I think what he's shown is that he can be reasonably counted on to be better than half the quarterbacks in the league, if that makes sense.
We here in Detroit know how great the offensive line of the Lions is. You mentioned the tackles in Minnesota. I'm sure they're not going to say it publicly, but they have to be smiling a little bit that they don't have to face Hutchinson at all this week or the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I know for a fact, because I helped out on a story that ESPN did about Aiden, that there's a lot of respect for him in the locker room. Like, they view him as a generally, you know, good opponent that they want to beat, obviously, but they don't hate him. And there was, you know, they hate it, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of those guys hated to see what happens to him. But as good, you know, they've gone out of their way to point out how many other good, great players the Lions have on defense, and there are. But, like, everybody's, you know, on planet Earth and knows that that's a huge hit, and that the Lions are going to have to make some adjustments. And, you know, if you had a choice, obviously you wouldn't want to face them.
Greenard has done a nice job replacing Danielle Hunter, and the, you know, a lot of the signings that the Vikings had under the radar. Van Ginkle, I guess we saw a little bit in Hard Knocks, so people knew him. Cashman, who's doubtful this week. But, they don't get a lot of publicity, but those guys have really been kind of like the glue guys to this defense, haven't it?
Yeah, they signed a ton of veteran free agents this offseason, in part because their drafts have not been great the past few years. But most of them had some connection to Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator. Like, Van Ginkle was in Miami when the Dolphins Flores was in Miami when the Dolphins drafted Van Ginkle. You know, Cashman came as a recommendation from a neighbor that Flores has, because Cashman's originally from Minnesota. Grenard, they had seen him show not only pass rush skills but ability to be in coverage too, and to play against the run. That was very important to the versatility of their scheme. Stephon Gilmore, they signed at cornerback. He had played for Flores in New England. And so, like, he had a plan for all of these guys, and it's been pretty wild to see it all take shape. But they, you know, that as much summer discussion about who was going to be the quarterback here, what became very clear early in camp is that they had a very talented defense.
Is Flores going to be, I don't know, the Ben Johnson of this offseason, although obviously he's had experience as a head coach and probably most people don't think he should have lost that job. Are people in Minnesota, like, worried that he might leave?
Oh, I mean, certainly fans are worried. I don't know if people in the building are worried about it yet. I mean, it's hard to say that there's been another, certainly defensive coach and maybe even any assistant coach in the league that's performed at a higher level than what Flores has done. I mean, they've not only been the best defense in the league so far this year, they've had one of the best five-game starts in terms of advanced analytics that a team has had in like 50 years. And so it's just been a historic run that they've done, and a lot of it's what I talked about earlier, the amount of talent that they have on the field, but also the coaching as well. And so he's got a lot of obstacles to overcome. Some of them have nothing to do. Like, we know about the lawsuit. We know about the comments that came out of Miami there from some players. But just if you take all that away, like, he's a defensive coach. Teams are very, you know, want the Ben Johnsons of the world before they want the Brian Floreses of the world. And he would be looking for his second chance. And you don't see a ton of defensive coaches get second chances. And so whether that's fair or not is a separate discussion, but the odds are definitely against him getting another job given all those circumstances. But certainly there's worry about it because he's doing such a great job this year.
Speaking of worried, how worried is he about stopping the Lions offense, which has been terrific most of the season, but especially the last two games?
Yeah, and what he said about it earlier this week was really good, I think. And what he said is normally you look at an offense and somewhere in between all the successes they've had, there's a weakness, something you can exploit, something you can say, here's where I get into them, here's where I knock them off their rhythm, here's the thing they're not great at, and this is what we'll dominate, or this is what we'll force them to be better at than what they normally are. And he said, with the Lions, there really isn't anything. Like the run game has been, you know, maybe the best in the NFL if you add it all up, and the pass game is awesome as well, as Lions fans know. And so whether he's just saying this or whether, you know, he meant it, he was struggling to find a weakness that he could start, you know, sort of build the game plan around earlier this week. So my guess is that he knows that if you can't stop the Lions running game, you're going to have a hard time stopping them in general. So that's where I think it'll start. But, Jared Goff's seen this scheme before, and there's a lot of quarterbacks who have been rattled by it this year, but I don't know if Goff is quite as this is probably not a word, but rattleable as some of the other guys they face. But we'll see. You know, the Vikings knew they can't, you know, they would have to keep evolving the scheme over the course of the season to keep people guessing. And so I'm sure that Flores will have some new stuff for Jared and the Lions this week.
So what do you look forward to as far as an outcome in this game? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I just keep saying, like, the Vikings are going to have to lose sometime. You know, and this is the best opponent they've faced so far. They have had, the extra week to rest up, and it'll be at home where they've been pretty good this year. But I think the Lions have a pretty good shot at this one, just given the way they're playing. And even with the Hutchinson injury, it's going to be a fight. But the matchup suggests it's going to be a hot, there could be a lot of points scored in this game.
All right, I've one self-serving, selfish question to ask you. On my spare time, I do the public address announcing for a local high school around here, and Tristan Jackson went to that high school.
Yeah,
and so I've seen him and I'm kind of stunned that he's still sticking around. But you know, like again in receiver and other things I've seen, social media, it seems he's very popular. He caught JJ's touchdown pass in the preseason. Any chance, obviously, not Jefferson or Addison, but of playing at all?
So
maybe not this week, but I mean,
they love him. And if and when there's, like, even this happened last year, they had a run of injuries at receiver, and he ended up catching a huge 2-point conversion in the game that they ended up winning in Atlanta. So they totally trust him to be on the field and to run their entire offense. I think he's been on their practice squad for a few years, and this year he's on the active squad. So should something happen, you know, their top three guys are Jefferson, Addison, and Naylor. But if something should happen there that, you know, and they need to get, more backups on the field, I don't think they have any trepidation about playing him in that situation. But it's just they have a pretty talented group ahead of them.
Final thing, because you're connected around the whole league, not just the NFC North. Gut feeling of who the Lions will be able to get to take or at least help with the Hutchinson loss?
Well, the obvious, I mean, there's been a lot of big, huge names talked about. One that has to be solved at some point is Hassan Reddick with the Jets. He got traded from the Eagles to the Jets, and you thought everything was going to be.
He just doesn't seem to fit the Dan Campbell culture, though.
No, but I don't know. Like,
I know, like, you can have one guy like that.
Sometimes, like, if a guy doesn't want to play for the Jets, like, maybe that is a good thing. Like, maybe he's smarter than everybody else. And so, like, that's something I've thought about as well. But he'd be a little bit of a lighter lift in terms of an acquisition, at least. But you're right, there's going to have to be somebody. And I know everybody wants Max Crosby or Myles Garrett. And that's the dream. But it might end up being somebody closer to Hassan Reddick.
Kevin, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Have fun watching what should be a really good football game. I always enjoy reading on ESPN.com, and I know you'll see our buddy Justin Rogers up there in Minneapolis on Sunday.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Kevin Seifert from ESPN.com for his time today. Like and follow the Detroit Football Network podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. The Detroit Football Network podcast is produced by me, Zach Clark. For more Lions content, check out Justin's work at DetroitFootball.net and Will's work at 971theticket.com. For Justin Rogers, Mike Stone, and Will Birchfield, I'm Zach Clark. Thanks for listening.